So when you hear a Black woman tell you, if the Lord sees fit, you need to figure out what you said that was trauma in their home buying history, in their family, and go deal with it.
Welcome back to the Gated Podcast. Today, I'm very excited to finally have CEO and co-founder Patty Arvielo here as a guest. The one and only woman in this country leading a major retail lending company, New American Funding. She's here to discuss NAF's new white paper titled Bridging the Gap for Diverse Communities. And she has promised to deliver a lively episode by bringing on her Senior Vice President of Strategic Growth and Expansion, Ms. Gatling, who has an impressive record of accomplishments, such as creating a $100 million mortgage business while addressing the unique challenges faced by mortgage officers and emphasizing the psychology of the minority homebuyer. So without further ado, let's get into the episode. Well, thank you all for being here. I'm very excited to introduce to the podcast two prominent figures in the mortgage industry. From New American Funding, we have the co-founder and CEO, Ms. Patty Arvielo, and Senior Vice President of Strategic Growth and Expansion, Mose Gatling. We're here to discuss a newly released white paper called Bridging the Gap for Diverse Communities. But before we delve into that, we'll get into... I usually like to ask my guests about their career journey up to this point, especially if their ethnic background, culture, or gender has had any effect on their journey thus far. Would either of you kind of be comfortable telling us a little bit about your experience or how you got into the mortgage industry?
Sure. I mean, my story would be really long. I'll be celebrating my 43rd year in mortgage in a couple of weeks. So, I come from a Latinx upbringing, and really, honestly, I just wanted to make the most money I could make per hour. I stumbled into a clerical position with TransUnion Credit, where I would type the derogatory mortgage trade lines on the mortgage factual report. And soon thereafter, I found out that the girls ordering the reports more money than me. And I asked them what they did. They're like, well, we do mortgage loans. And I'm 16, 17. I'm like, what is that? So, but I did find out they made more money than me. So I then went to the Sunday paper, because that's how we used to find jobs, and scoured anything that I could find that had like mortgage opener or mortgage in it. And I started out as a receptionist at a savings and loan way back when, and just climbed the ladder. And 43 years later now, I co-founded New American Funding with my then boyfriend and my business partner, who's now my husband, who's amazing. And we've built this extraordinary company that I'm super proud of. And I'm super proud that I get to work alongside women like Mose.
Awesome. And Mose, could you give us a little debriefer on how you got into the mortgage industry?
Yeah, actually, I got into the mortgage industry, I'll say almost by accident. I literally in school was working at banks and credit unions. And I went to work at a credit card company here in Las Vegas and found out my significant other got orders to transfer back where we were from to Kansas City. And I was thinking, how am I going to work? I want to do something. I want to stay with my company. And the only thing the company had was a mortgage division in Kansas City. And I couldn't work for the credit card company anymore. So I started investigating what that might be like doing mortgages. And I was already intrigued because I had a career history working on the financial side of things to start with. So I transferred and started doing mortgages for people, but really helping people in my very community that were diverse like me understand the process, basically how owning that home can change their life. And I found my sweet spot in life once I did that. So here I am.
Perfect. And yeah, with New American Funding, I think people kind of know that you guys put a special emphasis on helping underrepresented borrowers and underserved groups. How did that, you know, become a passion for you guys? Was that, you know, always intentional and part of the company?
Well, as a Latina, you know, it really, the fabric of this company is who I am. So when everybody talks about DEI and I cringe, or, you know, the whole in the box type wording that we're explained by, when you are of a different ethnic background, you don't feel different. You just are who we are. So the company is built by the fabric of me and who I am and how I've grown up. And, you know, certainly being an empathetic leader in mortgage wasn't too popular years ago. It is extremely popular today. So, yeah, I mean, we have male, female leadership. Rick and I are both co-founders. So you have female leadership, you have male leadership, you have a cultural, different cultural background leader. So people just generally resonate to our company because they see themselves in leadership. And that is just like the number one thing I talk about across all companies, is that it's all good to talk, walk the talk, or try to talk the walk, or whatever it is, but you've got to have senior leadership that mirrors different cultures, different backgrounds, you know, outside of just your typical white male leader who's very much, you know, this is what mortgage looks like. They look like Rick. All my competitors, there's very few women who actually run large size mortgage companies. So yeah, it's a natural evolution to diversity, is just building a company that's diverse.
Absolutely. And like you said, I mean, it's become more popular, kind of a buzzword. You know, we have our DEI, and you see a lot of companies coming out with these really ambitious initiatives, and being able to tell, you know, whether it's kind of disingenuous or actually authentic. You know, it varies company by company. And Ms. Gatling, I actually looked at your LinkedIn bio, and I thought there was something particularly interesting. It said that you created a $100,000 mortgage business while actively addressing the unique challenges faced by mortgage officers and emphasizing the psychology of the minority home buyer. So I want to ask, you know, two things. What are some unique challenges faced by LOs? And what do you mean by, you know, the psychology of minority home buyers? That sounds interesting.
I think it's interesting because I wanted to really like authentically communicate and connect with the people I was serving. And kind of what Patty touched on is lived experience is such a major part of that. So unlike most people who set out to gather or collect first-time homebuyers, Black and Hispanic borrowers, I'm not doing that. New American Funding isn't doing that. By having the lived experience within the company, we can literally tap into those markets, serve those markets at a very, very high level, because we're not doing it off of any statistical data we collected. We lived it. Like, that's what's insane about it all. So kind of throwing away the old thoughts of mortgage and real estate, in by saying that, I mean, I say it with love, I guess, but when you think about it, a lot of the terminology and the way we approach these buyers was developed back when fair housing became a thing in 1968. We're literally using the same nomenclature, the same titles, the same way to describe people and connect with them, as if it's still going to work this many, 52 years later, really? Like, we're still doing that? How do we go out and really figure out what the home buyer literally wants? So as a Latina woman, as a Black woman, we are able to literally figure out, map out things that meet them where they're at. And they're authentic, which is a whole different way of marketing to people, to talking to people, to really being able to serve them. Whereas when we talk about other companies, the leadership looks different, right? They're going off of reports and HMDA data. There's no other way to describe it unless they picked up the phone and maybe called their Black or Latina friend and said, hey, what do you think about this, right? And do they have the depth of mortgage experience that we have to really put things in place for the employees as well as the people we're serving externally? So yes, that lived experience connects with people like no other. The things that make current outreach and maybe DEI. I have a thing about DEI. I mean, I almost eye roll when I hear it, because who wrote DEI policy at any given company? Was it someone that looked like the people they're trying to talk to? Then where'd you get the information from, and why did you think a DEI policy would work? Because you hired somebody that checked the box of who you thought you needed to connect with, and they don't have the relative experience to execute. It's different. So the people that work here, they represent all categories of people and communities, which is fabulous. Women leadership, male leadership, you know, Latina, Black, all the things in between as well. He, she, they, like from the leadership all the way down. So we have a very authentic way of connecting, and people want to work here because of it. And buyers want to come here because of it, because they don't hear the same old thing, which isn't accurate in most cases, 52 years after it was put into place to start with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And authenticity seems to be, you know, there's a lot of emphasis on that within the white paper. And we see a lot of reports, a lot of studies kind of come out about, you know, minority home ownership, a lot of stats filled in it. So I want to ask you guys, you know, why did New American Funding publish the white paper? What is the ultimate message behind it, besides some of the stats that it points out and the kind of agenda that you guys have laid out? I mean, what are you, you know, really trying to express to the rest of the industry?
Well, you know, it was my idea when I first met Mo. I'm like, Mo, we need to do a white paper. We need to talk authentically about what we're doing in a very positive way. Like, we're so tired of hearing underserved. Like, I think it's unmarketed. Like, you don't have a marketing plan that speaks to the communities in which Latinos and Black Americans live. So, you know, we're not all poor. We're not all underserved. There's an underserved white population as well, right? Are we marketing to them? So we kind of want to just twist the narrative around and make it more positive and enriching for people to want to authentically build companies to serve the markets in which we live, right? So I always feel like every time I'm on a call, and, you know, I've been on every panel, I've been on every committee with Fannie, with Freddie, with the MBA, with HUD, with the CFPB. Nobody talks. Everybody talks like from fair lending days. I mean, from 1968. And I'm like, no, it's so different now. The fabric of the United States of America is changing. I mean, we were built on diversity. We were built. I mean, how many people have you heard say, oh, I'm so proud I'm Italian, I'm Irish. Well, I'm proud Mexican, right? And I know Mo's a proud Black American. So we really wanted something to come out where we're empowering these communities and not making it feel like their home ownership rate is going to stay where it is. There's a few things that we feel that are a little different that people are talking about, why certain lenders aren't wanting to dive into these types of loans, why the banks, I mean, you know, I don't blame the banks for not wanting to do these types of loans. So we really wanted to come out with a white paper that empowered these communities, empowered companies to want to serve the markets and to market to us the way we want to be seen and heard. Mm-hmm. So just a different narrative. We want to change the tune to more upbeat, more positive, not like, oh, woe is me. We're not getting mortgages. We're all getting denied. No, we are not all getting denied, and we are all not poor. So we just really wanted to change that narrative. And Mo, that's how Mo and I became friends. We had one lunch and she's talking to me. I'm like, oh my gosh, I found somebody who talks just like me. Right.
It's frustrating. Frustrating in our point of view, because when somebody sees us, regardless, say they don't know my title, they don't know what I do for a living, they instantly go to, oh, great, maybe we have programs for you to be able to buy this. They instantly go into down payment assistance, fair housing mode just because of how I look. They don't know anything about me or what I earn. And that's unfair to people and also discouraging to the point where you probably have tons of mortgage-ready Black and Hispanic buyers that are sitting on the sidelines simply because you market them wrong. So this is a way to kind of illustrate that a little bit and maybe change that tune so it isn't posed to people as they are the have-nots simply because they're Black or Hispanic, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And under-resourced is another synonym I've been hearing a lot. And I think it's just more accurate, you know, it's just a more accurate term of what the problem is. And I want to point out one standout statistic that the Black and Hispanic applicants face higher mortgage denial rates at about, you know, 22 to 16 or 17% respectively, compared to, 10% for white applicants. And this disparity was primarily attributed to higher debt to income ratios, lower credit scores, difficulties verifying non-W-2 income. So, I mean, if we're looking at that and kind of delving into it a little bit deeper, finding what the main culprit is behind that disparity in the mortgage approvals, is it the you know, who needs to take accountability here? Is it the originator who needs to be more creative, needs a more diverse array of products to work with? Is it the lenders not providing an adequate or diverse array of products that would meet these needs? Is it something much bigger, you know, like lending standards that need to change just industry-wide? You know, where would you place the significance?
Well, I think it's a multitude of opportunities, right? These are opportunities. If you think about it organically, a typical Latino family, if you speak to the broad market, they're probably the first Latino to buy a house in their whole family. So how are they, their exposure to buying a home has been zero. You know, on my white side of my family, like my dad, you know, they owned a home and their grandparents owned a home. So when you have generations that have been homeowners that you can look back to and you inherited generational wealth from them, you learn from them in the family network, in the fabric of who they are, right? Well, in many Latino and Black families, they are still the first. They're still the first. Mo, I don't know if you're the first, but you know, my mama didn't own a home. My grandparents did not own a home. My parents did buy a home. And so I was able to watch them. So I did a little bit, did know when I was 16, you know, about the home buying process. So that's organically what we're looking at here. Cause historically, we're not a really, you know, looking at a lot of years here, if we span 100 years of our history, which really isn't that long, you know, with 50 of it, the last 50 years, I mean, 50 years ago, women couldn't even get a mortgage without their husband co-signing for them, right? So we're not even looking at that big a span of time. So organically, that's how I see it. So I think this is a huge opportunity for the times that we're coming into instead of like a hindrance, because I think the programs that I've been offered for years from HUD, from Fannie, from Freddie, from the banks, non-QM is phenomenal. We are addressing home ownership at a very large percentage. I mean, I co-own a company called Champion. 63% of our loans are to Latinos.
I was just going to say,
I co-own Champions with Evan Stone. So, you know, we're really doing things that address the company, but the primary things we're marketing to the communities in which they live. We recruit Latino LOs, we recruit Black loan officers. We're going to where they live, where they, you know, we're marketing to them where they are. So I think that that's organically. I think Mo, you can talk a little bit about some historic. She's been an originator from, you know, I quit originating years ago. So Mo's been, Mo is still in the game, which is what I love about her so much as a leader at NAF, is that she really is walking the talk big time. So Mo can kind of talk to you a little bit about what she's seeing. Mm-hmm.
I agree wholeheartedly. I think it is a good opportunity. I think a lot of the opportunity lies and some of my success has come from being able to talk to the homeowners, being able to create marketing that spoke to them. They felt included. We always talk about being inclusive, but how do you do that if you don't know how to talk to people? They don't understand. And it's not a mortgage glossary situation. It's being able to explain to them how they can have their own path to ownership based on their culture and not erasing everything that they are already. Mm-hmm. So in growing my own mortgage team, that's how I did over $100 million. I wanted to make sure that the people I hired represented the people that we would serve. So they're all races. They're Hispanic. They speak Spanish. They're Black, you know, all the things. That way, when people are talking to us, we have that lived experience to maybe share with them about how the paths sometimes are so similar, it's scary, right? You laugh because you were raised similar, you different cultural nuances. And that guidance, I feel, is important to be able to mirror with the products, like Patty is saying, that are there. There's availability. We're evolving in that arena. But can the originators evolve along with it, you know, in order to be able to have that lived experience to share and make sure that the home buyer can relate to what you're trying to convey. Mm-hmm. I've had that problem being in the business myself, even being taught in the business as I was younger in the industry and coming in. It's different. My path of getting into the business and being a successful originator didn't look like a lot of other people that were in the business. So it's hard for them to describe to me and say, oh yeah, just go out and get loans. but how? Explain how I do this as maybe a Black woman out in the community. It's not going to be, you know, my dad didn't have the golf buddies, right, to call. And he didn't go to college. He graduated high school and went right into the military. So no, we didn't have friends that owned mortgage companies. We didn't come from a place of wealth, you know? So how do you talk to people and be right where they are and being able to convey that? So that, I feel that that's huge. You know, we're getting the programs. We have a lot of programs to help, but explaining that path besides an approval or denial, beyond just the approval and the denial, is huge too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I hear that comment a lot that, oh, well, it's so difficult. It's so difficult to work with somebody who, you know, has a high DTI or a lower credit score. But is it, you know, there are things you can do to obviously kind of mitigate that and make it less difficult. And there are people who solely do this, who solely, you know, look for out for these communities, for these underrepresented borrowers. And, you know, it doesn't seem as difficult once you have the tools at your disposal. You know, it tells you that this is not a cookie cutter loan. But I you know, I wonder if difficulty is kind of just an excuse that people are pushing to, you know,
it's time,
you know, as an excuse to branch out. Yeah. Well,
we say time consuming, because I feel that people, when they see a challenge, as an LO and you're originating, what's the time from the time you take the application to closing that loan? And that's when your paycheck comes, right? So do you have the patience to take the time with some of those things? And a lot of times it's not that they're a project, it's that cultural background has made them, it's their habits, right? Mm-hmm. But your culture shapes your habits and how you treat your relationship with credit and how you use it. And sometimes it's just talking through that with them to say, I know your culture provided this upbringing and this path. However, there is another path and we can tell you what that path looks like. Mm-hmm. So, it's worth the time though. I know it's the feel good part of it when you're doing loans. It's awesome.
And once you do, you know, build a trust, build a connection, you get their loyalty in return. And I mean, that's always the trade-off when you're working with any sort of, you know, more difficult borrower, is that hopefully they will refer you word of mouth. And then that is you breaking into that community and, you know, breaking, you know, branching out in your career. And you touched on something relating to financial literacy that I did want to bring up today. Studies show that consumers, you know, of all ethnicities don't know that much about mortgage, of course. But there are studies showing that from the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority confirms that there is a gap. So Asian American and white test takers tend to score higher in financial literacy than Hispanic and Black test takers. This apparently starts at a young age, which is kind of what you were saying before, with another survey showing that 15-year-olds see the same disparity. What does that kind of tell you about those communities? When we're talking about financial literacy and what needs to be done, I know originators like to work it into their conversations with their clients. But, you know, speaking more generally, are there programs? Are there other things that, you know, lenders can do to kind of help build financial literacy among, you know, at a younger age or before the home buying process even begins?
I mean, I think any company should have, you know, some sort of program or outreach into high schools. And we partner with a young man out of Atlanta, and he has a financial literacy bus. He was just on Good Morning America, and NAF sponsored his bus like 5 years ago. And, you know, so our outreach has been very organic for years. And, you know, if we can even just get into that community, we've partnered with Hispanic, you know, high schools, you know, we HBCU. So yeah, all of us could do our part. The government could do their part. I mean, the government is not helping here, so that's a whole other conversation. But I mean, really, at some point in high school, we should be learning what it takes to buy a car, to buy a house, to get a credit card. You know, we don't teach that. Instead, you know, we got away from even just teaching us how to cook in high school, essentially. I mean, you know, they've gotten rid of so many programs. Financial literacy is something we can't get away from. And the fact is that most of it's now being handled on the phone. That's just a whole other speed of information coming at them that they're not going to understand. I bet you in a few years, you're going to be able to get a home loan through just looking at your iPhone, you know, through identification through your eyes. So there is so much work that can be done. And yes, everybody can do their part. NAF's doing their part. I know several of my competitors are doing their part, but it really takes, you know, us to do it as a unified front. And honestly, we're not. We never have been. We've been on an island doing this work for a really long time. Mm-hmm. And it became a passion of mine in 1994. The second I closed my first Hispanic loan, I was like, oh, these are my people. This is my culture. They spoke Spanish to me. Like, this is where I wanted to be. And I think most stories the same. So, you know, we were lucky that we found doing loans within our culture, super exciting. And we found our passion. I think every company needs to find somebody within the organization that shares the passion. You can't just simply say, I'm going to check a box. I'm going to do a bunch of loans for Blacks and Latinos and then have a white person leading the efforts. It doesn't work because both communities, although they look at different things, are bound by trust. I get a lot of this business because they Google me. They see, oh my gosh, a Latina owns that company, right? Mo gets a lot of business because of the way she represents. So if you have companies, just, and I call them unicorns, I know it's really funny, but if you hire a unicorn all the time, you know, just a Latinx person with a Hernandez last name, and you say, oh, we're going to do Hispanic loans, it's great, but they better have power at your company. They have to have a seat at the table. You cannot hire a unicorn and give the unicorn zero power. He doesn't work, or she doesn't work. Really, you got to give them, they either need to have ownership or they need to be in the C-suite acting like an owner. And I know Mo can kind of explain that importance of that. But really, that is how mortgage companies are really going to dive into the communities, because Latinx and Black community look at trust. Mm-hmm. Two different things, but they want trust. And so if you have white people saying, oh, we're just getting into Black lending, which really you're just getting into Black lending. I mean, Blacks have been on this on this dirt for a long time. Like, we don't want to hear you're just getting into Hispanic. We're just getting into Hispanic lending. I mean, where have you been? So that's where people like us are like, okay, we got to change the narrative here. And we got to it needs to be like super exciting and super opportunistic and important to your company. But it also needs to be important to one person, find their passion and give them power in your organization. And that's when you'll start to see that type of business really start rolling in the door.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And authentic representation is another term within the white paper that you guys talk about. I want to give you a chance to kind of define authentic representation, how that can help underrepresented borrowers, and how to practically kind of go about that as a company, if you're, you know, a recruiter or someone within the position to influence that. How can you do it, you know, in an authentic way that's actually going to affect change?
Well, I attracted Mo to our company, but I actually, somebody within my company said, Patty, you really need to meet this Mo Zay. I just saw her on a panel and she's dynamic and she talks like you, because I talk very non-traditional. I talk like I'm in a handbook or something. Right. And, what I love most about her is I didn't even know she was like number two loan originator in the whole state of Nevada. And I live in Nevada. Like, is this all like meant to be? But from a recruiting standpoint, yes, I had been looking for a Mo for a really long time because I wanted to give my employees, my Black employees, leadership that they could respect and that she walked the talk or he walked the talk. So I needed a top producing loan originator or a top producing branch manager to give them a leadership position at NAF, because I need their voices at the table. I didn't grow up in the Black community, right? I have a passion to serve the Black community, but I told Mo, I need you because I need authentic Black leadership at NAF. And as much as I want to win in this market, I want to be that for the community. I am not Black. So I said those exact words when I met her. And some people might cringe. They're like, oh my God, I can't believe Patty would say that to somebody that looks like Mo. But that's the problem with people right now, is that they want to be seen as Black. She's Black. I'm Latina. Like, you know, we want to be seen who we are. We don't want to hide behind our culture. And so I said those words our very first lunch. We sat there for like, I don't know, 3 hours. And I'm like, oh my God, I so need someone. I need to give you this extraordinary platform that we've built for your community. I want you to plug in. I want you to lead. I want people in my organization that want to be Mo to have somebody to look up to that actually has done a lot of loans, that just doesn't talk about doing a lot of loans in the Black community, but actually does a lot of loans. So there's from a recruiting standpoint, it's very authentic, very real, and very intentional.
Absolutely. And that sounds, I mean, to be someone, you know, in a position to kind of represent that your culture in that way, your community in that way, it sounds like a lot of some weight to bear. But as you said, I mean, the authenticity kind of comes across right away. It seems like you were able to earn respect quickly from, you know, your peers at the office.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because this is where Patty, again, we clicked. It was crazy, insane, but she knew that she didn't want to hold me back either. She lets me be me 100%, which means maybe I don't always give the canned answer. I don't sound like a fair housing manual, but guess what? My customers don't either. That's what's authentic. I know that I've been places and worked at places and still see in the marketplace the same canned marketing photos. All the verbiage is the same and they pop in Black faces, Hispanic faces in and out. It doesn't speak the way I would speak at home or if I was at dinner with my friends. Do we talk like that flyer? I can tell you how we talk though. And what if you market that way and it's more attractive to them and it's pleasing to their ears? And now we're not a company simply accidentally getting Black buyers or Latino buyers. We are with intention getting them. That's where the authenticity comes in, because I can tell you how I was raised. I can tell you what my mom told me. I can tell you a lot of those things that are culturally set and what's norm. So we can go out and attack them head on when we're talking to our consumers. I still personally go out into the community and do events, and it's amazing. And it's amazing because it's so fulfilling that when my face is on a flyer, and I say, I'm going to come talk to you and I'm going to tell you what it looks like to buy a house in 2024. My crowds are Black women because that's what I look like, you know, and they want to know and they're hungry for the information and they're excited and ready for the delivery that I have to give that is not the canned way of doing it, because they've been to classes before, a lot of them, but they said, I had to come to yours. And when you talk about Black homeownership, who's leading the charge is Black women, statistically speaking. So I am able to show up and with authenticity, attract the very people that are leading the charge for home buying in Black America and talk to them the way their aunt would talk to them or their mom or their best friend would talk to them, and them get a different meaning out of some of those things that they may have heard from somebody else. So that's how you authentically connect with your community. And Patty had it right. She's already doing it in the Hispanic community because of her own upbringing. So now I get to do it with the employees that work here. And we just click, we resonate because they get that, because maybe I'm like their aunt or their mom or, you know, their best friend. And they see that and they connect and they learn a different way to do business and be out in their own communities without having to be apologetic about who they are and how they present. So it's an amazing opportunity. I do take it 110% seriously, but I feel like it's just what I needed, because it gets tiring as a Black originator in the marketplace when you don't have access to those tools and you can't necessarily be a part of building something that dynamic because everything is so canned and somebody came up with it that doesn't look like me. So it doesn't sound like my family. It doesn't sound like anything I would ever do, which makes it a very uncomfortable process to buy a home because everything is written by someone that it's so foreign, you know? And it is something great that we can and actually do and connect with the people who want to buy homes.
Absolutely. And that's great that you're able to kind of entice that crowd to come. Because oftentimes when I see these statistics, Black females in particular, the disparity is huge. It's crazy. And when you talk about, you know, kind of tailoring advertising efforts to kind of align with with what they're in touch with, with their culture and how they like to consume news and this kind of financial information. Is there also, I know you were talking about language, is there also some discrepancies in what platforms, like, do they want to see a flyer? Do they like to, you know, receive ads, their information in other ways? Are they attracted to different platforms? You know, where, what different avenues can you kind of take with that?
I feel like there's a ton that we're accessing. A lot of people don't know. There was always Black Twitter, always Black Twitter. There are a ton of Black consumer conferences and employers. Believe it or not, there's like a Black Aeronautical Society. There's all these things that I consume as a Black woman, you know, the publications I consume, the places to be, what I look for, what's pleasing to me, that I can now, you know, share with NAF in all things. And we can talk about that and have this open dialogue. I love it because it isn't something that Patty does and says, oh no, it has to look like this. She's willing to step out of the norm of what's been cookie cutter for so long in the industry and explore these things. Because typically, yeah, being a Black woman, I'm not marketed by mortgage or financial. They literally just make sure that there's someone Black on the ad or the commercial. There's Black LinkedIn, you know, that I follow. So coming here and being able to talk about these things openly, and it's digested by all of the leadership, 100% of them with open arms, because they're the first to say, well, I don't know. And, but you know what, this is what we need. This is what the culture within the company needs, is someone that knows, and us to not just try to figure it out and say, this is it. Here's the magic pill to solve Black home ownership. But we can talk about the things that are relative to, you know, Black Americans that are digesting the very data we're trying to get them.
Absolutely. I mean, I had no idea about those, some of those alternative platforms and that, how would they know? I mean, a lot of them even struggle to kind of connect with the younger generation. So, you know, going into, to, you know, specific communities, no doubt that they'll struggle with it.
We're changing the game, girl. We're changing the game. Yep. Right?
Absolutely.
And that's the kind of positive stuff that we, Mo and I, really want to set out, you know, for the mortgage industry. And, you know, as somebody in ownership and has the literally total blessing to have the seat that I have, it's my responsibility to elevate people like Mo. It's my responsibility to start to scale what Black leadership in mortgage looks like. I mean, and honestly, I've been in mortgage 43 years. I can name like five Black leaders in mortgage. Five. And we won't even go Latinx. Like, I don't even know. Like three. So five and three, we need to do a better job as leaders and corporate leaders and our owners of our companies, you know, to really start to elevate these very important voices up in the C-suite. That's how we're going to attract, you know, the younger generation. They want to see themselves in our company. And like I said earlier, you know, being an empathetic leader, even like 12, 13 years ago when I started in distributed retail, and we've only been in distributed retail 13 years, going in our 13th year, nobody at the beginning would come work for me after I interviewed them. They'd always go work for like one of my male, you know, peers. And I used to sit in my office and be like, I don't get it. I'm so nice. Like, why don't, you know, I would really... because it wasn't in them, you know, everybody was driven by that bro club fraternity type. I got a plane, come look at my roles, da, 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 you know, and I'm like very humble and I don't think that that's attractive. And it is our time now, because I'm seeing as the generations have changed and now we're hiring and literally organically one of the fastest growing mortgage companies in America last year. And we didn't acquire a mortgage company until January this year. Our numbers are extraordinary because people are coming to NAF because they want to work for leaders that look like Mo. They want to work for leaders that look like me. They want to work for a president that's a female. I mean, I'm hearing this over and over and over again. And so maybe it wasn't in 13 years ago. In fact, I can tell you it wasn't in. I was everybody's second date, never their first choice. And, but now I'm finding that, yeah, the younger generation looks at companies different. They want to see companies that are not just getting into things that should have been built within the fabric of the organization years ago, prior to George Floyd, prior to the way the government speaks about diversity today. They want to see that. And if you Google NAP, you can see my stories going back post, to, you know, as far as the internet goes, about lending to the Hispanic community, because I was Hispanic. This is what I wanted to do. So I really just think that what people can learn listening to this podcast, and if I were white male in the mortgage industry, I would so listen to this podcast, and I would so give somebody that looks like Mo and I, or male or female, a position at the table with some power, with some decision-making skills. Like Mo has changed the name of our Black initiative since she came here, and I let her. Like Mo has changed the direction we're going in, where we're showing up in conferences. You know, I've given her this authority, because who am I in the Black community? I'm just another person wanting to get the community to use New American Funding, but it's no different than somebody from my competitor who wholeheartedly, I believe, all of us want to do loans to Latinx and Black, right? That's why that's a whole other podcast. We all want to do every loan we can, okay? We don't care about your color. I don't care if you're a white male that owns a mortgage company, but if you really want to learn how to do what we're doing at New American Funding, you need to elevate the leadership. And I can Google most of my peer companies, and their leadership is still white male. Mm-hmm. In the top 100, okay, I've studied them. We have some female presidents, but they're not founders. It is different. I'm telling you, the way I sleep at night is different than a president that's at a company that wasn't, you know, a founder. I want to leave this industry with way more Mo's. Mm-hmm. I want to retire, and that you, Katie, have so many female mortgage founders to interview, you can't even keep up. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be the unicorn. I don't want to be the first anymore. And that's my whole goal. The last 10 years has just been empowering the mortgage industry, especially females, to rise. Like, you can own a mortgage company. You can do, I was a processor in 2004, right? You can do this. You can have this, but you need people like Mo at the table.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, I've learned so much from her, and she's only been with me a few months, literally. And I love how you guys are picking up everything that she's saying, because it's not just NAF needs it. The entire mortgage industry needs to hear Mo. There's very few, like five Mo's in the whole home. We need to do better as an industry, way better. That's okay. That's way then they won't be underserved and unmarketed to, because they're going to be from their communities. They're going to grow up in their communities. We just need to do a better job as an industry.
Absolutely. And something that you kind of touched on, there's typically when, you know, a DEI officer or someone's kind of talking about this a bit disingenuously or without much knowledge behind it, they're using umbrella terms like, oh, Hispanic borrowers. And yeah. I know that's something that you have touched on in conferences, saying there are differences, there's cultural nuances, even with, you know, with different ethnicity groups, there's cultural nuances that you have to be aware of if you're an originator trying to establish trust. Do you know who you're talking to? So I was hoping that you could kind of give, you know, either one of you a debriefer on the importance of understanding cultural nuances. To what extent, as an originator, do I need to be aware of this?
So aware. I tell everybody, I mean, Patty, I learned something from her. She challenges me mentally when it comes to cultural nuances, even more than I already challenge myself, because she's like, well, you have to watch it. You're talking Hispanic. Every Hispanic culture does not eat tacos. Like the Taco Tuesday situation, it's cute, but you can't market that way, because to some people it's offensive, because now you've put everybody in this little bucket and said, you just have to be here because I said you have to be here. But even with Black culture, I was talking to a loan originator, and this is an originator from a different company. I challenged him. I asked him if he had ever heard a Black woman tell him that upon doing an application, that they would go forward if the Lord saw fit. And the originator happened to be white, a white male. And he told me, yeah, I've heard that a million times. I said, do you know what that means? He said, no. And I'm like, it means that the person mentally checked out on you. They've faced so many obstacles in the trek into getting a home, or their parents did, or their parents' parents did, and nobody's ever earned. So they're going to go ahead and lay it in God's hands. They're not going to get too invested in the situation because they don't want to be let down. It's almost like an armor of sorts. So when you hear a Black woman tell you, if the Lord sees fit, you need to figure out what you said that was trauma in their home buying history, in their family, and go deal with it. Because you will have someone that will be so grateful and happy, and you will feel so fulfilled by getting them into a home. But you have to know culturally what that means. This is a competitor of mine in the market. This is someone that we both serve, one of the same home builders. And because I want to see everybody get a home, I wanted to talk to him and kind of challenge his thought process on what it meant to serve Black homeowners. To me, there's a difference. I can go out and just do loans, or I can really try to connect with people and understand where they're coming from. That's the psychology of a home buyer. And it takes lived experience to know it. Or again, you're just pulling stats and guessing and throwing things on flyers that aren't really connecting with them. So if you've never heard anyone just say what I told you, it's because they're not Black.
That's a great example.
And they haven't been raised in a Black household where their aunts and their grandmothers, and everybody still says that to this day. But even in my own household, I know, oh, they've disconnected. They checked out on me because it's that the Lord sees fit. Okay. What about if the Lord blessed you with me to help you in this process? But I can deal with that and contend with that. And I've taught my team that, people that would have otherwise not known because they didn't have that lived experience. So exactly what Patty said, for reasons of being able to connect, that's a real life example we can use to say, hey, you definitely need to know. If you don't, you're missing out on some things with helping people and also with your profits if you're a mortgage company. It doesn't make sense to overlook it anymore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's such a great example, because no stat can tell you what that means if you're already unaware. And what that signals immediately is, I don't trust you, you know, or I don't really trust you enough. It's in the Lord's hands. It's not in your hands. Yeah. But you need to tell them it's in your hands, you know.
So come to data doesn't give you that, honey. Mm-hmm. Only someone like me or who live like me can. And that's why we both say lived experience is what's going to turn the tide on the way that mortgages are delivered. And having diverse people from diverse communities and backgrounds across the board is so important.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And something that we kind of touched on before with financial literacy, how that starts at a young age. In this particular industry, being aware that this is a job option and being, you know, kind of exposed to that, happens more so within the white male crowd. And I know that a lot of people call this a legacy industry and like to kind of attribute it to that. In terms of what we could do, the industry as a whole, what we could do to kind of expose more people to this as a career path, and, you know, not just as a way to kind of build your own financial literacy and help the community that you know, but also as, you know, obviously to diversify this industry and get more authentic representation. As a whole, what are some things that the industry can do to kind of promote that and have it seem attractive? Because I know that not a lot of people immediately would think, like you guys, that a career in mortgage is particularly attractive.
Yeah, I think it's just all of us sharing our stories. I mean, I've not met one person that purposely got into the mortgage industry. I think that's going to change. You know, I have, I'm the first Latina to have a business school named after them in the United States of America. And so I contribute to the curriculum that's going to be taught in the business school at Vanguard University in Southern California. And you rest assured that we will be talking about careers in mortgage, especially since 63% of the students that attend Vanguard are of a diverse background. This industry has been a total gift to me. A total dream come true. And my whole family's pretty much in it. My daughter just married one of our branch manager's sons. My ex-husband works at NAF. I mean, for me, if we're not doing a great job telling everybody, especially working moms and women, how great and how flexible the mortgage industry is, then we're not doing this. We're doing a disservice to the people that we're leading in a whole. Like if you're a mentor in your community or you're a mentor at a company, it is a phenomenal career. It's stressful, yes, but so are a lot of other jobs. But, you know, we can make as much money as we want. there's no limit to how much we can make. The opportunities are endless. You can own a mortgage company like me. You can be a leader like Mo. I mean, you can interview people like us, like you, Katie. I mean, to me, it is a gift. So I feel like that's part of my life's purpose is to tell that story. And I'm hoping one day when you interview people, they're like, well, Patty Arbiello told me to get into mortgage. Yeah, it is a gift. And I think if you've spoken to so many of us leaders, every single one of us talks about life changing. I mean, I was going to be a dental hygienist. So, you know, the things I can do with the power I have and the platform that I've built and the wealth that I've created to help others is just extraordinary. Mm-hmm. It's just so much fun. So yeah, the business school, Vanguard University, we will be teaching about the mortgage industry at our school.
Perfect. And this is a beautiful industry. I mean, in my eyes, it's a very, you know, it's kind of like a fair marketplace. There's not one company completely dominating the mortgage market, getting all the borrowers. Like, it is highly competitive. It's a healthy, healthy market. You know, it comes with its ups and downs and its stresses, but I think it creates, you know, great opportunity for anyone who wants to get involved. I definitely agree with that message. In terms of what the agenda that you guys laid out in the white paper, in terms of legislative reforms, do you kind of want to discuss what you guys have planned going on there specifically to kind of help close the homeownership gap?
Well, I would love every government entity that regulates mortgage to have the private sector on their advisory board. Mm-hmm. I mean, not just somebody that maybe worked at a mortgage company 10 years ago, but somebody who actually owns a mortgage company today. There's plenty of us that would spend our time sitting on a board to give them relevant information, relevant facts. If we could just start with that, you don't know how many times I've been audited where the regulators have come in and they have no idea how to analyze the HMDA data. They have no idea how to analyze pricing exceptions, because they don't have anybody on their team that comes from where we sit. I know most of my peers in this space, top 20, and I will tell you, they're all really great founders. They want to do the right thing. Just because we're big doesn't mean we're doing something bad. Mm-hmm. You know, they're over-regulating the best companies and under-regulating the ones who are still doing all the criminal behavior. So there's a lot of things that they can do that are common sense to really make a broad approach to expanding credit access to those borrowers. I mean, would you fund a loan if you thought the CFPB was going to come in and audit you? I don't blame some of the smaller mortgage companies for not wanting to target Hispanic lending or Black lending. I mean, yes, they have, some of the communities have a higher propensity to default. I mean, you can see it in the numbers. And it doesn't mean that they're going to go into foreclosure. It means, no, we need to step into the servicing portfolio. We need to re-educate them, get them back on track. It's a little more hand-holding in the servicing book. So what, everybody who sub-services, make sure you get with a servicer that understands how to service minority loans. I have a lot to say. Put me on a board. But see, they don't ever ask me to be on those boards, right? CFPB should have me on their board, HUD, FHFA, every state regulator should have the private sector, at least one of us at the table.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And people say this industry is constantly changing. So having someone who constantly has their finger on the pulse is definitely somebody to listen to. Anything to add to that?
I agree with Patty. I find talking to people that work in the government sector, anytime I've had to, they always seemed amazed by the things I have to say because I still do mortgages. It is a trickle down effect, and they're a little bit maybe behind the power curve when it comes to what things look like on the street. So Patty is super, super involved. She gets involved with loans, loan level things as a CEO. And so does our president, which amazes me. So they're not out of touch with what's actually happening and the why behind it. So when you have boards and things compiled of people that look at numbers and stats only, it gets a little bit rough to be able to execute, I feel. So talking to people about what I see on the street is probably my donation back to what maybe happens, you know, in the grand scheme of things. But they should have more people, leaders on the board, on their boards to give advice and even an advisory council. Like, let me even throw that out there, an advisory council to be able to deal with these things if they are truly serious about moving the needle and making something happen. Black home ownership has increased at a snail's pace in the past 52 years. 8% is no growth metric anyone should be proud of. You wouldn't be proud of it if it was for your own company. So it's something that I take super seriously in trying to make sure that if I have the opportunity to speak, I do, to stand up for what that looks like in real life, in real time. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And something that we've talked about kind of throughout this is, you know, is this a passing trend? Is that all just going to disappear, you know, in a few years, or is this going to be a sustained effort? And I think the question there is how many people, how many companies are doing this authentically and genuinely? I want to ask you guys about that. What are your hopes, you know, based on what you've seen the rest of the industry do? What are your expectations for the future about how we're going to carry forward these initiatives?
Well, I think if you want to be in the mortgage industry, you better work on these initiatives. I mean, you have to.
Yeah.
Our country is changing. I mean, the Latinx numbers by 2050 will be the majority, not the minority. I mean, you know, we love to have kids. Now, with immigration, we do border Latin countries. I mean, you know, there's a lot of things. And I just, for me, it's common sense. I don't know. Like I said, I'm Latinx. We want to be with our people. It's like the difference. Like, you know, when I go to a NARP event, I feel like I'm home. When I go to a NARAB event, I feel uncomfortable. So it's the same thing with the white man trying to figure out how to do these loans to the community. There's no difference, right? He didn't grow up in the culture. Most of them are he's, but you know, I'm just being really honest. I still feel that way. Even as a woman founder going to the MBA, I still feel odd. Right. I would rather be in a room filled with Deb Stills and, you know, all the women. Instead, I feel like I'm trying to find them in a sea of white guys. So imagine trying to do loans in the Black community as a white person, or try to do loans in the Hispanic community as a white person. They feel the same way. So I feel the same way too. So we all are trying to figure this out, but it is the fabric of this amazing country. So we better figure it out. For me, culture is what is significantly great about the United States of America, because we are a melting pot of so many phenomenal backgrounds. That's why we're the superpower. You know, we don't think one way. We don't look one way. We all have these like extraordinary lived experiences from the past, some not so extraordinary. So I think it's just, for me, it's fun. It's not something you have to do. It's something you want to do. And I know every leader in mortgage wants to tap into these types of loans, but it's just find the passion, find the person who has a passion and put them at the table. That's simply said. And the other thing, I'm going to give a plug to the MBA. If every single IMB is not a member of the MBA to support them, because they are the only ones who battle on behalf of us. And it's a shame that I show up there and, you know, I look at the top 50 mortgage companies, the same 10 of us still writing the checks, same 10 of us still there, same 10 of us on the same panels. I mean, the fact that we're not all of us are supporting the MBA, so that we do have regulators that understand exactly what we're doing, is a shame. Like, we have more MORPAC and MOM members at NAF than any other company in the United States of America. Why? I'm not the biggest. It's because Rick and I, and Mo knows this is important. We love the mortgage industry. We love it. And so we better fight for it, because there's a lot of people fighting against us, thinking we're doing things wrong when we're not. So I would totally plug that every company write the check to Mortgage Bankers Association. They do the work. They've been such a great partner for NAF and for every loan officer, processor, underwriter, anybody who makes a living. They should be writing a check towards MA, towards the lobbyists, and getting our voice in DC heard. I mean, that's why NAR was, up until last year, the biggest lobbyist, is because every realtor has to contribute to their PAC. Well, we have such a much more regulated business, and we're doing good. We're serving the home ownership. We're creating the American dream. We're helping, and we're a big part of it. And so I want the industry to support the MBA, because they do the work. They're at every single event in DC. Every single person knows who they are. Bob does a phenomenal job. So does the entire leadership team. They're fighting for us. So, you know, I think that we need to do a better job as an industry supporting them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And like you said, I mean, I think it's a matter of time. You know, there are stats showing that we are going to have more and more diverse generations of homebuyers coming forward. And it's either you support them now, or maybe they won't be there to support you later.
You should have some narrative about your company, not just getting into Black lending in 2025. Mm-hmm. We're getting into Black lending. I'm like, oh my gosh, where are
newly discovered?
14% of the population is Latinos are 19%. We are here. We've been here for a long time. So yeah, no more we're getting into. I would highly suggest not using those words anymore. Like there's no announcements that need to be made about getting into this type of lending in 2024.
Absolutely. Mo, anything to add or to talk about, you know, some advice that originators could use going forward?
I think originators should really dial in and just, besides being there to get the loans, because we know that that is income driven, connecting with the communities that they serve, regardless of what you look like. If you are literally out there 10 toes down, trying to be in the trenches to provide service, I've always felt that when I'm putting good vibes out there, I'm definitely getting them back when it comes to my business. So by doing so, I've been able to increase and also pass that along. I'm like Patty, I love our industry. And I find that if we as leaders do that, and you know, hold fast to that and not just make it a DEI George Floyd thing. Funny, I had told Patty that I always have to be careful of who tries to, you know, have me do things, because I know quicker than not, they'll grab me up and give me a George Floyd title, is what I said specifically, which means put me in the DEI box when I'm a top originator and I do loans and I have a great business acumen. And I am just as aggressive as any other originator, but because I was Black, so many wanted to give me some diversity lending type title to hang over my head. And I just didn't want it ever. I never wanted it. So recognizing the talent that you also have within your business and the industry and giving them that opportunity, because it will change the way you're able to do business out in the community.
Thank you for listening to Gated Communities, hosted by me, Katie Jensen, for National Mortgage Professional. You can find more episodes at nationalmortgageprofessional.com and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Make sure to subscribe so you can get future episodes, and be sure to rate and review us if you haven't already. This podcast is copyrighted by American Business Media.